Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Booth 61. Featuring movers and shakers on the Atlanta tech scene, organizations serving the tech market, and the inspired people who lead them. Now here's your host, Ricky Steele.
Welcome and thank you for visiting Booth 61. I am Ricky Steele, and I passionately serve as the Chief Development Officer for Hunter Technical Resources, Atlanta's premier IT staffing firm. We have a very exciting show for you today, and we're going to jump right in. But first, I want to take a minute to introduce our producer, Kevin Finn. Kevin is a master at the control board and a very accomplished host as well. How are you doing today, Kevin?
I'm doing great, Ricky. Just finished up my show, and then I get to see you.
Well, I thought we had a great turnout last night for the Business Radio X networking event over at the concourse at DoubleTree.
It was weird, though. Everyone came like right at 5:30 when it started, and by the time by 7, everyone had already left. So I saw you there. You stayed the whole time, didn't you?
I think that I left about 9:30, so I must not have gotten the memo as to what time we ended. But we had a lot of fun, a lot of good conversations. Well, in any point in the conversation, feel free to jump in.
Definitely.
Kevin's not only a great master controller, but he also hosts a number of his own shows on Business Radio X, so be sure and tune into some of Kevin's shows as well. I'm very excited about today's show on multiple levels. As most of you know, our goal for Booth 61 is to build community and allow the rising tide to lift all boats. In my 15 years of being in the Atlanta technology community, I have found very few people or companies who have done more in this area than my guest today. Today is going to be a very difficult day for me on a variety of reasons, but it's going to be hard to be your host. I want to be the moderator. I want to actively contribute information that these folks may not tell you because they are very modest and they let their accomplishments speak for themselves. So I'm going to try my best not to do that because you're not listening to hear me. I'm going to do my best to remember that over this next hour. You're here to hear some fantastic guests, and I'm very excited to introduce them to you today. My guests today are the founders of Hunter Technical Resources, Atlanta's premier IT staffing company. You may have heard that line just a few minutes ago when I introduced myself as the Chief Development Officer of Hunter Technical Resources. I am a 4-year employee, and I'm a 6- or 7-year fan of Hunter. I have a 30-minute introduction about each of these folks that you would probably enjoy hearing, but again, I want you to hear them tell their story. In the booth today with me is Scott Hall, Alex Brown, and Clint Bailey, who are all Atlanta, Georgia-born natives who did not know each other until they attended Georgia Tech and became Sigma Nu brothers. Later, they were joined by St. Mary's of Notre Dame graduate Tracy Emery, who later became Tracy Emery Bailey. They formed Hunter Technical Resources. These four young people are smart, hardworking, ethical, and at the same time, very fun-loving folks. And they're very giving to each other, to our team, and to the community. So without further ado, welcome to Booth 61, Scott, Alex, Tracy, and Clint.
Thank you, Ricky.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Ricky.
Yeah, great to be here. We really appreciate it, Ricky.
Well, it's my honor, and I cannot say that with any more impact or emphasis. I'm going to preface these questions by saying that any of you may answer any of these questions. Some of these questions may be answered by all of you, and some of them may perhaps be answered by just one of you. In reality, you've been together as a team for over 20 years, and I often in the office hear you finishing each other's sentences. You know, most marriages do not last 20 years, much less business partnerships. And I think that family environment and love for each other and love for the team that you have created is part of the strong work ethic that is Hunter and why I love being at Hunter and why I pray that it'll be my last rodeo. And I think most of the people there feel the same exact way. Let's jump into some questions. This is the 15th anniversary of Hunter Technical Resources, 15 years and counting. Who would like to give maybe a 3-minute overview on how you guys first met, a little further than I started with, and why you decided to create Hunter Technical Resources?
I'll jump in on that one, Ricky. Again, thanks for having us. I don't know, maybe we should give you a hug, a group hug after that that introduction. But basically, when we were met in college, like you mentioned, we met at Georgia Tech, and and finished school together. Scott and I actually took a lot of mechanical engineering classes together, and being in the same pledge class, we grew very close, and Alex and I held leadership roles as we were graduating from Tech. So the three of us really had a really strong bond coming out of school. And luckily for us, Scott decided not to go into mechanical engineering and went into the IT recruiting and staffing business right out of Georgia Tech. And he was tasked with hiring other Georgia Tech, friends and engineers, because just the what Georgia Tech instills in you, the kind of the blue collar work ethic, the technical background, and so he recruited Alex and I into the recruiting and staffing world. And luckily for us, Tracy moved to Atlanta when we were with this other firm before starting Hunter, and the four of us formed a bond. And Scott and I early on knew that this was something that we could really pick up and learn quickly. And from before I even accepted the job that Scott hired me for, we talked about starting our own firm. And being in the late 90s was a good time to be in IT, the lead up to Y2K, and it was a good market, good time to be involved in that industry, and that's how we got started. We actually, all four of us, lived in Post Brookhaven, We didn't live in the same apartment. And then our passwords still worked at Georgia Tech at the time. So we basically, during the day, we founded the company out of the Rich Building Computer Labs, which is behind the library for all the techies out there. And we kind of fancied ourselves as business geeks, the nerds with personalities, and that's helped us, I think, also along the way.
I guess as a startup, things were really easy for you. You had big offices, fancy computers, and just like all early-stage dot-com companies, but I think I heard you just say something about an apartment.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Our first office was actually Clint and Scott's apartment, which was right on top of the Brookhaven train track. So about once an hour, you couldn't be on the phone because you couldn't hear anything anybody said with the trains coming by. But we started off fairly modest, like a lot of companies do. We worked out of our apartment for a little while, and then we got an office space on Roswell Road, which is actually a converted residential apartment, and that was interesting. Clint's office was in the kitchen. Jason, one of our other early employees, his office was in the living room. And me, Scott, and Tracy worked out of the bedroom, so it was a lot of fun.
But I even made the mistake of inviting a client over one time, and she let me know exactly how run down our office looked.
Yeah, so humble beginnings, to be sure, but I don't necessarily think that's unique to us by any means.
Well, how did you come up with the name Hunter? Was there a fellow named Mr. Hunter that maybe helped bankroll the startup or helped you get off the ground?
Well, that's what it's supposed to sound like. But Clint and Scott have a pretty good version of this story. I'll let one of them tell.
Well, it is something that the four of us set around and put some time into. We've found some pretty bad staffing company names over the years, but Hunter is derived from Headhunter, and that is that's who we are and what we do. We are headhunters. It also helped. We were looking for a name that had an established kind of history to it. And many times, at 24 years old, I looked all of 18 and did get carded for R-rated movies even then. Clients just assumed that Old Man Hunter had a corner office somewhere, and we let them assume that. It kind of gave us some, a little early credibility, we capitalized on it. But ultimately, we embrace being headhunters, and to this day, we still love doing that.
That's interesting. I've been on many sales calls with you, and when you tell that story, people get a real chuckle out of Old Man Hunter coming in the back. And being 60 years old, I still look at y'all as real youngsters. I've told the story a number of times, having worked at Hunter now for 4 years, that the first 4 or 5 months I worked here, I was unsure whether I should be shaking your hands or burping you. I think a few people have enjoyed that story as well. What were some of the issues facing companies in 1998 when they were looking for IT talent, and maybe to transcend that to some of the issues they're facing today? But, Scott, I know you were real actively involved in recruiting back in those days. What were the issues facing companies when y'all were first getting out of the ground?
Well, I think the landscape has totally changed in the last 15 years. The companies themselves were less savvy to the actual hiring processes involved. Now everybody seems to be in line. They have a very rigid process where it's more or less the Wild Wild West. As Clint always tells us, we used to get job orders for five DBAs that need to show up on Monday, and they just wanted to phone screen the person, or sometimes they didn't even interview the people. So I believe the companies back then were, like I mentioned, less savvy about the actual business process of the interviewing process.
And I think, too, one of the things that companies face now, you know, back then we probably more focused on technology companies. Well, these days, IT and technology, you know, are you know, throughout the organization. I mean, even if you think of a school these days, I mean, you know, report cards are emailed. You know, the parents and donors are tracked by databases. It's everything's done on the web. I mean, it's just you know, these days, you know, some of our big clients, you wouldn't consider technology companies, but they're probably some of our biggest, you know, technology employers in Atlanta.
And it is also a lot more difficult to define resumes and candidates if companies did not use recruiting agencies. For instance, the first job board started in 1994, and they did not start become prevalent until 1998.
One big thing I've noticed, and of course it seems fairly obvious, is back then there wasn't really an established hierarchy for salaries in IT, because a lot of IT roles were real new. And so these companies were either throwing big money at candidates, trying to figure out what they should pay for given roles. And another thing the companies were doing, if they couldn't afford to pay the money, a lot of them had crazy work environments, Nerf balls and
flip-flops,
Kool-Aid and kegs and all.
I think there's still some of that out there.
Well, but it's not as prevalent as it was for probably 2 or 3 years in the late 90s and right around 2000.
I agree, too. And I'd say a lot of the folks we were placing were probably, you know, younger too, just because, you know, a lot of the technology was new, internet, new email. And so the environments we're placing folks into these days, I feel, are, you know, the average age is probably in the early to mid 40s, where it was probably late 20s, early 30s back then, just because, you know, and we would get a lot of, these days I hear, you know, folks want, you know, rock stars or, you know, pick a technology ninja, you know, type of thing. These days, then it was, we want the whiz kids, right? We want the Georgia Tech, you know, whiz kids coming out of school, right? So I think these days it's just the landscape is probably a more mature candidate.
Conversely, what were some of the issues facing the candidates as they looked for jobs? I'm sure Monster wasn't created at that point. How did candidates go about trying to find new opportunities? Scott?
Well, it was a very difficult process back then, and as a whole, the candidates were a lot less polished. There's a lot of coaching going on. People are very prepared for interviews now, but a lot of the companies, or a lot of the candidates, rather, did not have very strong resumes and didn't really have a presence, but they also didn't have an outlet to search for jobs because the job boards weren't prevalent. There wasn't social media. LinkedIn was not around. Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that were not around. So they didn't have as many outlets out there.
Yeah, I found my first job through the newspaper. I think traditionally back in 1997, 98, that's how everybody kind of first went about doing a job search. But now you've got the internet, you've got social media, networking, of course, you know, all things that have changed since 1998 and, you know, looking in the yellow pages and black and white pages for jobs.
Hasn't the landscape changed about candidates in general? You know, back in those days, if you were looking for a job, you would not want your boss to know that, and you were kind of very quiet and secretive. Has that changed over the years?
Well, I would say you still don't want your boss to know that you're looking for another job, but with LinkedIn and some of the social media tools, it seems that recruiters are linking up with a lot of candidates, and that doesn't necessarily mean to your boss that you're looking for another job, but you know, we encourage everyone to expand their network. Because it's a great way to find a job and also find candidates, and that's actually Hunter's number one way of finding candidates is through our vast network.
as opposed to the job boards that traditionally people think are the hot spots. It's more networking and the internal database that you've created over the 15 years, and then other. I'd love to hear some of the other ways that our recruiters and sourcers find folks.
I'll jump in here. I mean,
don't want to give away the special sauce now, Ricky.
But I think
I need a job for a little while longer, so let's don't tell everything.
But well, I think too that we could be in here for days answering that question too. But you know, for us, you know, you mentioned the network. I mean, you know, I would say that especially the Georgia Tech connections, we do a lot with the school. We do we participate in several mentoring programs, speak on panels, you name it. You know, we host the Greet Meet at the Career Fair. I mean, so the Georgia Tech network is huge for us, and that's something that over the years, you know, we've put a lot of focus on, and we have a lot of inroads there, and that's probably the core of our database too. But I think too, you know, these days, you know, a change that's happened over the last 5 years, but especially over the last 15, is we separate out sourcing and recruiting now too. So even though our recruiters are more senior than industry averages, and they do still do some of their own sourcing, you know, we focus a lot on that side and separate it out. And we have kind of like I think you the way you tell the story is we basically are going through people's trash without going through their actual trash bin. But definitely online, you know, we have folks that are basically detectives, and they figure out who these folks are and how to get in touch with them. And then we have a senior team that calls the folks that typically our ideal find is someone who's perfectly happy in the job that they're in, well paid. And we're going to convince them that our client is better.
And going back to our vast network, I'm not sure people really understand how far we utilized our personal networks. For instance, my first client was my best friend's stepdad, who lived two houses up the street. And Clint, Alex and I really utilized our Georgia Tech network. I mean, I'm pretty sure every single Sigma Nu fraternity brother had heard from us within the first year.
Yeah, but they're just now finally getting in the jobs they can help us with.
Yeah, they can finally help us now.
When they're 25, they did not carry much weight, I assure you.
I don't think you can ever overemphasize the impact or the importance of Georgia Tech being here in Atlanta, not only for your success, but for the success of the technology community in Atlanta as a whole. And as a family of Bulldogs, we do have to tip our cap in great respect because Georgia Tech has really set Atlanta off as a city unlike very many other cities with not only the research and everything, but the amount of talent that comes out of Georgia Tech. I just wish there was a lot more folks came out of Tech every year.
You get in line. That list is long. And that's probably one of the more common requests we get, or, you know, help us recruit, you know, Georgia Tech, especially the new grads. You know, you can get a lot more value, I think, for your buck. But David Cummings, you know, obviously successful entrepreneur, technology, multi-startups, right? He one of his recent blogs was if Georgia Tech wasn't in Atlanta, neither would he be here. So, you know, that I think that says a lot. You know, again, I think the list is long of companies that wish Chris Klaus gave a lot more money to double or triple the size of the computer science, computer engineering building.
Well, I have heard from Chris. I know he listens to this show. So, Chris, just go ahead and dig a little bit deeper. Let him build some more buildings out there, and we'll have some more Georgia Tech graduates pretty soon. You guys chose the world of IT staffing. You're all very smart. You were all young college graduates at the time, and you could have chosen a number of fields. What were the issues you faced that you think maybe all businesses faced in those early days, and how maybe is that different today? Because, you know, not everybody listening is in the IT world, and I'd love to any entrepreneur to maybe get some words of wisdom, because y'all have been very successful for the past 15 years. Alex, I think that'd be a good one for you to give a whirl.
Well, you know, I think the biggest change and the biggest issue a lot of companies face then, especially if you're a company trying to get started, is how to get your brand awareness out there and how to sort of get your establishment in the marketplace. And then it was old-fashioned hard work. We utilized our personal networks. We got out there and beat the bushes and made a bunch of phone calls and did everything we could to sort of have our business penetrate the marketplace. And I think one of the things that are a little different, that's different now, is that there's still a large element of that, but there's also a significant portion of that effort that can be driven through these social media platforms that are out there. It's you know, you used to have a professional to to get your message and your awareness out to the marketplace. But now with a Twitter account and a Facebook account and a LinkedIn account, you can accomplish a lot of those same things that companies just couldn't do 15 years ago.
I think, too, Ricky, you mentioned, you know, what faced folks then and they still face now. I mean, I think that one of the things that starting a business you have to be ready for is it's a lot of work. Luckily for us, we were 23 and 24, and Scott was the old man at 25. We didn't have a lot of obligations. We didn't have our responsibilities. We didn't have a mortgage payment. You know, so we could work 10, 12, 14 hours a day. If someone called us on Friday at 4 o'clock, that's what we're going to do this weekend. And we still do that today, right? I mean, hard work makes luck is what we live by, right? So I think that's something that was prevalent then and will always be prevalent for anybody trying to start up a business.
And I think Tracy had one of the most difficult tests when we started up. Our wardrobe was not exactly cutting edge. And she had come a long way. Thank God there's no pictures surviving from our first year in business.
She was carrying you to Walmart and etiquette class all the same day. Well, going back to 98 again, and I want to move forward fairly quickly, but what were one or two of the most important decisions you made that still have an impact on Hunter today? Because you do have double-digit growth. Your foot imprint, your respect of the community, but you did some fundamental things right that if you had not done, you would not be here today because a lot, and I don't know if it's in the hundreds, maybe in the thousands, of companies have started IT staffing businesses since 1998. You will not find them in the Yellow Pages or on Google. Y'all are here. What were some of those early decisions you made that created the opportunity for you to be here today? And maybe that's another Alex question.
Well, I think there are two really differentiating decisions we made that really allowed us to see a lot of success. And the first one is that when we got together and started this business, we wanted to make some money, but we also wanted to create something that would last a long time and be here for a while. And one of the key initiatives we put in place was to build a business around a retained earnings model. So, and what that means is if the company has a big year financially, the ownership or the partners don't take the money out of the company. They actually reinvest the money back into the company. Save that money for a rainy day, build your balance sheet. And that's really what we did. And so it really paid off for us during we're on the tail end of the most recent recession. And a lot of companies had to shut down and downsize when things slowed down about two and a half years ago. And we actually were able to maintain our staff and took it as an opportunity to gain market share and really increase our footprint. And actually, we had some of our best hires during that time because there was a lot of talent on the marketplace. And so we used that rainy day money we'd saved from our retained earnings model picked up good market share, picked up great talent. And so when things started to pick back up in the IT staffing world, we were really a step ahead of all of our competition.
I think another thing that we've done a good job over the years doing is having a wide client base. When folks – I was asked recently what we kind of hang our hat on, quite a bit, surviving, 10, 15, hopefully 20-plus years – is, surviving these two recessions. IT and the technology community was hit a lot harder and a lot faster, I think, in the dot-com bust. And then this last recession, no one was untouched, right? And, we were glad at the time to be, I think zero was the new hero, flat's the new up, were some of the sayings. And we felt good to be there considering that on average, the average staffing company was down 25% in 2009. And then there was a Wall Street Journal article after the dot-com bust that 20% of the staffing companies, were gone, folded, went under. And so to survive those two, I mean, I hang that, obviously, like Alex said, having some financial smarts and security there, but also a wide client base. We didn't rely, and we still to this day have a wide client base. We don't rely on just the one, two big companies in Atlanta and we spread that around and try and hang our success, spread our success across number of industries and a number of different type of technology companies.
Yeah, and there's one other thing that I think was really important to our success that we decided basically from day one, and that's that we wanted to treat our business like a family. You know, the environment at Hunter Technical, we really wanted to make it different and make it a place where people felt like they belonged, and we worked cooperatively with each other instead of competitively. And I think that's made a big difference. Our internal employee retention's great. Our turnover is low, and I think that's a really unique differentiator in the marketplace. So between the retained earnings and the diverse and wide client base and the sort of Hunter family environment that we work in every day, I think that's kind of our keys to success over the last 15 years.
And I think to kind of add to what Alex is saying, and Alex brings up a really good point, is that one of the things we've always had and we've always held in place is to have open lines of communication between the partners. Do not let something fester. Do not let I more or less leave the office angry. And just always have an open line of communication. I mean, sure, some feelings may be hurt for a couple minutes, but at least they'll appreciate that you're open with them.
So I think Alex is going down a path too, talking about our internal, you know, family culture. But you know, none of that would be possible without, you know, the team that you know, it's been there and stuck with us. You mentioned 4 years, and you're still probably one of the newer employees, right? So you know, we have folks that have been with us, and Jason's been with us since I think after 6 months, right? So and Rob's been there 13, and Stephanie, and a lot of these folks have been with us for a long time, and you know, they're working hard too.
And one last thing I want to add is that when we first started the company, we always wanted to add the technology to technology recruiting. And one of the ways that we were able to separate from the competition is actually utilizing technology to our benefit. And one example was kind of lucky, but I was up late one night researching how to get better rankings on the search engines that were around those days, which were Yahoo and Lycos and AltaVista. And there was not a Google back then, believe it or not. We found this application called Web Position Gold, and we had a fraternity brother as a software engineer from Georgia Tech, and he was able to program it correctly. So all of a sudden, when someone typed in Atlanta Technical Recruiter onto Yahoo, we came up number one.
Wow.
So we got a lot of phone calls, and it was very serendipitous that we...
I think, too, it adds credibility. You know, back in those days, if they had to research us and they saw us come up that early, you know, or that high. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I want to move on, but this is where I have to interject. I'm trying to do the best that I can not to do a lot of that, but I think what you said the last couple of 3 or 4 minutes is a critical component of the success of Hunter. The fact that you three guys did not even know each other, create an environment, you get to Georgia Tech, you spend your 5 years there, you kind of disperse for a year, you get back together, 15 years together, and that means over 20 years you guys have been very, very close to one another and Tracy. You go on family vacations together. You have meals together as a family. That is the strangest thing I have ever seen in the history of business. Most business partners hate each other and see each other at work only. And as a result of the love that y'all have for one another and caring you have for one another, it permeates the office and that family environment. It's why Jason's been here this long, why Rob's been here this long, why I'm a newcomer at 4 years. And this is the longest job I have ever had in my life that I did not own the business. I'm usually 2 years and out, and I've now doubled that time period. You go through our office and you feel it's a family environment. You don't hear I've been in offices where every other word is four letters or worse. And you don't hear that. Do we have fights? Do we get upset? Do we have things that don't go our way and somebody loses their temper? Sure, we're all human beings. But by and large, this company is as close to a company that's created some synergy that I have not experienced before in my 50 years of being in business. So I tip my hat to you guys, and I think it's why Hunter is such a phenomenal place. And our clients understand that. Our clients tell me that in person. I've never been around a group of nicer people. And I think nice guys do not finish last. Nice guys continue to finish first, and you guys are doing that. I'll stop right there, as hard as that'll be for me to do. What made Hunter different then, and I think this is kind of on the same subject, but make different then than makes it today? I mean, have you seen anything in addition to some of those cultural issues, financial issues, or anything you want to add to that, Alex?
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing that's really unique, and it really worked in our favor, especially after our first two or three years. But for our company to be the size business we are with the experience we've got, our management and ownership, we're all still relatively young. So you get a lot of that energy.
Amen.
Sort of our younger blood still running a very established, very, you know, very proficient business. And, you know, we're not as young as we used to be. That story had a little more impact when we were 30, 31, 32 years old and, you know, running a successful business, and you know, we had a lot of pull and a lot of punch in the recruiting world for our age. But it does continue to be pretty compelling because we're all, you know, 15, 20 year veterans in the staffing world, running a 15 year old company, and you know, still a lot of youthful energy around our office. I feel that's a big differentiator we have.
I agree. And I think, you know, you've seen the RFPs we've done and won over the past few years. I mean, one of the three differentiators we put on there is passion, right? You know, we love what we do. We enjoyed it then. And you know, there's a lot of satisfaction you get helping people, right? You know, I had a friend, you know, who was in this business who got out. And one of the things he misses the most is, you know, when you sell in our business, it's not just transaction between you and the end person. There's a third party here that's thrilled with the placement. You know, you have the candidate who we're changing someone's life, right? Typically, right? You know, you're helping them improve their family situation, and it's a big deal. And we take that to heart, and we take that seriously. But you're also helping the client, you know, and we take a lot of pride in, succeeding. Making successful placements for our clients. And it's I think that passion is probably what, you know, like Alex said, we don't think of ourselves as 15 years old or 15 years in business. We probably do think of ourselves as 15 years old. And you said you've been working for 50 years. How's that?
Well, I got my first W-2 in 1963, and I still got the cards for it. I was 11 years old,
okay.
So that makes 50 years of working. I made $2 a night as a bat boy for a AA baseball team. And I got my first W-2 1963 at 11 years old, and I haven't stopped since. But that's not what the show's about. How important is the company culture at Hunter? And I think we've kind of dabbled into that a pretty good bit. But let's talk a little bit about more of the culture. And I think Tracy, you're a lot of the epitome of that. People look up to you and respect you a great deal.
Thank you, Ricky. I think when we set out to start building the team at Hunter, we knew that work is somewhere where people spend the majority of their day. They're around the people you work with or the people you're around more than your family for the most part. So we knew it was really important to hire the right people, hire people that were passionate about what we do, passionate about putting people to work. So we really took our time in building our team. You know, we may interview a lot of candidates, but not everyone gets hired at Hunter because we really want to make sure we're finding someone that's going to fit in with our culture, that, you know, is passionate about what we do and wants to stay with Hunter for the long haul. Part of our passion is a commitment to community service. We're really involved in a lot of organizations around town, Project Open Hand, Atlanta Community Food Bank, Children's Restoration Network. Last year at Thanksgiving, we had an office outing where we sorted food. Just about every quarter, we try to do some sort of volunteer project that's also team building for Hunter, but also giving back to the community. So that's a big part of our culture as well.
I think Tracy touched on something there. You know, you try and hire folks. We set out when we were only 24. We thought a good strategy was to hire folks with experience. You know, hire folks that that were smarter than us, you know, and that's, you know, I would say for us, you know, it's a tough business we're in. You know, I was telling somebody last night, you know, we sell the only product that can tell you no. We sell the only product that can change its mind. And we're seeing that a lot more often right now that the market's picked up. And you have to be able to, you know, you have to have folks that can put that into perspective. I think one of my sayings over the years is, short-term memory, positive attitude, and you know, strong stomach, because it is, you know, it's a lot of work, but it is gratifying.
My next question, Tracy jumped into it, and I want to expand on a little bit further. The question was, how important is being involved in the community to Hunter's brand and Hunter's culture? And I think you begin that conversation, but I'm just going to start throwing out names, and I want you all to start throwing out names, and because I think that for a company of four owners and roughly 30-something people in the office and maybe 150 or more out on payroll or whatever, I mean, we've been very, very successful. The amount of organizations that you're involved in a regular basis is quite large. I think of the Atlanta Community Food Bank, United Way, Project Open Hand, you mentioned earlier, Scottish Rite. What are some of the others?
Women in Cable and Telecom.
Mm-hmm. WIT, of course, and TAG.
For Pete's sake.
For Pete's sake.
Sigma Nu.
Sigma Nu. And I think y'all spent some time at Georgia Tech mentoring. I know Clint mentors a number of individuals there, and y'all are very involved in that network.
Now we just need to start recruiting for the football team. But I'm on the board of TechBridge, which I'm very passionate about, and Hunter is too. And I mean, I'd rather not list them all, but I mean, there's definitely, you know, we try and make a pretty, you know, huge effort to get involved, and financially, you know, we try and support a lot of the charities of our employees and you know, others in the community and of our clients.
Again, that's that Hunter humility, but this is just the tip of the iceberg of the organizations that you support with your time, but also with your money. And that, to me, says a great deal of the culture. And I would be remiss without saying that you're not only the vice chairman of the board, but the youngest and the only service provider in a senior leadership position in an organization that just raised more money in the last digital ball than they'd ever raised before. And so to that, I tip my hat to you and to James and Carrie and Jay Farrow and all the wonderful people at TechBridge who are doing a great job of impacting our community and making this city a better city for all of our citizens, whether they're in technology or not. So anyway, that's another reason I'm in awe of Hunter. Let's talk a little bit about the IT staffing industry. What are the biggest mistakes you guys see companies are making when attempting to make crucial hiring decisions? Today, we've spent enough time on the 15 years ago, but today, what are some of the issues that you see companies really off base?
One thing we see is companies taking too long to make a hiring decision because these talented IT candidates, you know, are getting multiple offers at the same time. And if you take too long to express interest and get through the interview process, there's a good chance that you could lose the candidates. So that's, you know, one piece of advice I would have for company hiring is if you like somebody, make sure you're ready to move quickly on getting them in.
And I also think that companies, this happened a lot more now than it used to, but they're asking candidates to wear a lot more hats than they used to. They're trying to fit two jobs into one job, or even sometimes three jobs into a job. And they're trying to work with a leaner and meaner workforce, but in return, they're kind of working these people to death.
Also, I think one of the challenges that we've had over the last 3 years since we've come out of this most recent recession is that, you know, the media and you know, all the reports were that unemployment is very high, right? 8%, 9%, 10%. And, you know, unemployment for professionals with college degrees, I believe it never got over 6.5 for you know, college degree, and I might not have even gotten over 6. But in our space, in our world, in IT, you know, unemployment's negligible, and it has been for the last, I'd say, probably 12 to 18 months. And in fact, it's probably reverse unemployment for many of the development skill sets, where we have 3 and 4 jobs for every one developer. So for us, there's been a lot of educating, a lot of discussions, and a lot of strategizing with clients on what really the market is, especially for the talent that they want to pay us for, the talent that they're going to pay us for, right? And they want the top 1%, top 5%, the best of the best, the mathletes, the, you know, whatever they want to call them, right? And that's those guys are working, and they were really never probably out of work because you don't let your top 10% go, you know, unless things get really bad. But I think that's been probably one of the biggest challenges is you know, seeing managers or seeing folks that don't recognize really what the market, you know, from a supply and demand standpoint, you know, has been and currently. I think in the last 6 months, folks have heard it enough and have probably experienced offers turned down, which they probably hadn't had in years. They've probably you know, have losing top talent on their team, which they haven't seen since, you know, probably before the recession. So I think things like that are waking folks up, but that's, you know, that's definitely a big deal right now.
I heard something on the radio last week that a new survey was out, and 7 out of 10 workers across the country are all open to make a change. 70% of the workforce is willing to make a change. That blew my mind. I knew it was probably high. I did not realize how high, and maybe with what Scott had to say about them being overworked and asked to do 3 jobs, et cetera, et cetera. I also know that at Hunter, we place hundreds of people every single year into new opportunities. What's the percentage of those folks that we find on the job boards or in our private space or what have you, and how many of those people do we take out of another company, percent, you know, ballpark percentage-wise?
Well, statistics are all made up on the spot, right?
42.7% of all statistics are made up on the spot. Or was it 47.1%? I can't remember.
You know, I'll let Scott dive into this one more, but I did, you know, we are typically placing somebody that is currently working. If they've been out of work at this point, you know, it's a bit of an issue, I would say
over 95% of the time, if not higher. Usually, like Clint mentioned, in some situations there is a negative unemployment. And, for instance, mobile developers. I mean, there's a lot more mobile development jobs than there are mobile developers in Atlanta. And there's not exactly people sitting at home looking for a mobile development job if they have the skill set. I mean, they'll get gobbled up quickly. But we had that same question in an RFP recently, and the person seemed somewhat shocked that we pull from other companies, but that's the nature of the beast.
As long as they're not a client.
Yeah, as long as they're not a client.
I guess the moral of that story is if we're having to pull 95% of our people from other companies, we do not pull from anybody that is a client of ours. So if you'd like to become a client of ours, please call me this afternoon, and we will never take another one of your folks away ever again. So I guess that may be a good defensive ploy.
But I think, too, Ricky, that's what people pay us for, right? I mean, they're paying us a premium. They're paying us a fee to go find the talent that they can't find on their own.
And Ricky, there's one other mistake we see clients make, and it's the old penny-wise, pound-foolish. And, you know, our clients give us salary ranges and compensation ranges of the type of people they want. And sometimes we, you know, if we find a great person who's a little bit above the salary range, we'll present them anyway. But, you know, a lot of times clients will say, well, no thanks. He's 5% higher than I was willing to pay. And in that case, it might be the best employee you've ever had. You know, you may want to consider paying that extra 5%. And I just, you know, wanted to make sure that point was out there.
Has that been changed with the VMSs and the new systems that have taken over from dealing with directly with managers and directors who actually know what's going on in that situation? I'm not slamming because we work with a lot of great VMSs, and you know we play by the party rules. But it seems like maybe that layer sometimes makes things cut and dry.
It can be a hindrance, and there are a lot of benefits for companies who use VMSs. But that's, you know, you give up sort of that personal touch, and with the personal touch, there are, you know, some of the benefits are being able to sort of read between the lines and know when you've got a really great candidate that's worth the extra money, even if it's not very apparent on the resume.
I think just in our world, just like in the saying, you get what you pay for. I mean, it's, you know, absolutely applicable in the staffing side too.
And it's our job to make sure that our client knows when it's okay to pay a little bit more for a given person.
What are the hottest skills? We've mentioned a few of them, but what are the hottest skills and roles and trends you see right now? Certainly mobile, I think Tracy mentioned. What are some of the other .NET and Java has to be right at the top of the list. What are the other skills that you see that are just red hot on fire right now?
Any kind of web development role. As you mentioned, Java and .NET developer roles are very hot right now. Oracle roles are hot. And mobile development. If I were in college or a junior or senior, I would start learning mobile development ASAP if you aspire to be in the IT industry. In certain cases, entry-level grads, especially from Georgia Tech, are making 75K for their first job in mobile development.
And anything to do with the any of the cloud technologies and cloud services, which I thought I was hoping we seems like most of the conferences or networking events we go to these days, they try and refrain from saying either cloud or big data, but you can't. And those technologies that are in the especially in the big data space, a lot of the, even the open source technologies, they're really seeing a real big increase for needs there.
This parallels and goes right into that as far as the get what you pay for, but where do you see the cost spend going in the staffing industry? Salaries are not going down anytime soon because there are no bodies, so if you're going to get somebody to leave a job, you're going to pay them more than they're currently making. And yet you've got the pressure from maybe some of the VMS-type systems or even procurement, we're only going to pay X number of dollars for this position. What's the chance of them filling that position?
Well, it's supply and demand. As this demand continues to exist, the cost of our product, the cost of the people in the marketplace, it's going to gradually go higher. And as long as these skill sets remain scarce, we see the salary cost going up. And the VMS and more aggressive procurement departments will mitigate that to some extent. But at the end of the day, that will free up good candidates for us to send to other clients who don't necessarily have the same restrictions or VMSs who are, limiting a true market cost for the people. So we do see the cost going up. It may not be dramatic. These things typically take a little while to sort of bake into the marketplace and for all of the players to realize that there's been a paradigm shift and, salaries have increased by 5% or 10% or 12% or whatever the number is. But it'll happen. It'll go up.
Yeah, we're seeing everything we're reading as well talks about salary increases for a lot of the technology skill sets, like Scott mentioned earlier, the mobile space especially, but also even the security space. But it's not like the dot-com days. The run-up to the dot-com days, we had companies that gave everybody a BMW lease or 20,000 stock options, what's another 20K? We'll pay that, but then they weren't in business 6 months later, so a lot of their stock options are probably more for show.
And, another thing that companies we see using if they can't really compete on the salary-wise or maybe at the lower end of a salary range is work-life balance, allowing developers to work from home a day or two or even 40-hour weeks working from home. And those kind of perks definitely help. I think candidates, aren't just looking at salaries anymore. They're looking at entire benefit packages. They're looking at, health memberships. They're looking at work-life balance and, is this job on the MARTA line and things like that. So candidates are a lot more savvy than they used to be, and it's not just about money. Candidates are definitely evaluating the total package that a company has to offer besides just a salary.
Especially in Atlanta with the commute issues we have, that's probably one of the biggest differences we've seen in the last 15 years. Not that traffic wasn't bad 15 years ago, but it's much, much worse now. And we could recruit somebody in Marietta to commute to Tucker. These days, if they take that job, they're not going to be there long because there's so many opportunities closer to home. And we see that as probably a really big challenge for a lot of our clients is, they're losing, not necessarily due to money, like Tracy said, but due to work-life balance or commute or other issues that really came to the forefront coming out of this recession. I really think that this reminded folks what's really important.
I think that something else I've seen, 4 years ago when we were doing a permanent placement, I had a lot more people ask, what is your rate of compensation for the placement? When I was at Korn Ferry, it was 33%. The industry average in IT staffing seems to be about 20%. And everybody at those days were saying, could you do it for 15 or 17 or 13? Or a company that didn't have much business would agree to do it for that, and they would expect us to match it. I don't see that anymore. I think the companies realize that talent is tight, and they're you know, they're willing to pay us the fees that they pay us for the quality work that companies like ours do. I mean, Alex, you're involved in that more than anyone else. Do you asked that question recently?
Yep, and you know, it's funny because the fees that we charge for placing people haven't necessarily gone up, but they have certainly stopped going down, and the need for us to give discounts is it's not near as prevalent as it was at one time, just because it costs us so much money and consumes so much of our resources to find good people for our clients and they're in such demand that our clients realize this and everybody understands that they are, you know, it's hard to justify a discount right now with all the money and time being poured into finding the right people. So, now if clients are out there and they want to try to find they're looking for ways to be able to use third party companies like us to find their talent, there are other things they can do to still sort of, soften the blow of having to pay fees to find talent. And one of the things is working out creative payment solutions, you know, paying in multiple installments versus one installment. Some companies will work with you in special instances to do things like that. And some companies are willing to come off their fees a little bit for, as you mentioned earlier, volume discounts or, promise of repeat business, that sort of thing. So, you know, right now it's kind of hard for companies to justify requesting a discount from a recruiting company, but there are opportunities out there to, you know, help soften the expense some for these companies.
And so sometimes companies are nowadays are even offering direct bonuses to our recruiters to put their job openings at the top of the list, which, I mean, that didn't happen 15 years ago.
That is that creates an internal ethical issue for you guys. And I guess on the converse side, on the contractor side, if procurement or some VMS or some system comes in and says we're only going to pay X percentage over and above the bill rate or over and above the pay rate, they tend to not get very good candidates or any candidates at all, because we're all in the business to make some money, us and every one of the other IT staffing firms in town. So if you're not going to be able to get a return on your investment, there's no reason going out and doing the work. We don't need the practice. We're really good at what we do.
Well, I tell you, Ricky, we, you know, from a capitalism standpoint, a lot of times that's how it can shake out. But, you know, there are clients we have in place that operate through VMS and the margins are tight. And we try just as hard to give those guys the same service we give, you know, to the clients who maybe don't have the restrictions on margins and things of that nature. It's one of our challenges is to be creative. How can we service clients who aren't paying full market with the same type of service we give to clients who do pay full market? And, you know, it's really tough. I mean, the clients who pay full market, I mean, we want to make sure they're treated right and respond as quickly and with the best talent we can. And we strive to give that to the VMS clients and the clients who have the more restrictive margin requirements. And a lot of times we're successful with it, but every now and then it'll break down a little bit. So if you're out there listening, you do get get what you pay for sometimes with the margin.
But a little bit of a disagreement with the statement you made. I mean, we are loyal though too, and so that loyalty, that partnership that we've built over years. You know, we're still working just as hard on some of these openings where there may not be as high of a spread as others, but it's because we want to do well. We have that kind of beaten into us, that overachiever mentality from Georgia Tech. And, you know, one of the things that when we started Hunter, we saw companies and some of our competition to this day still, you know, they'll throw a perm opening into the trash can because they don't want to work perm. It's too much work, right? They want the easy contract roles. And we set out to look at every role the same, you know, and where we've hung our hat over the years on filling some very difficult roles. And I think that we've built a reputation every time based on that. And our clients know that. And we have clients that go back. I had to check an agreement recently that was dated 1999. So, you know, I think that, you know, it was kind of core to some of our early beliefs that you know, every client's important, every rec's important, and you know, the long term view of that is the money will be made.
Yeah. I guess I was more getting to the point of the candidates that you can find that you can work within the system sometimes are not the you don't find the highest quality candidates that can match the criteria. But I do think the overachiever mentality that you mentioned of Georgia Tech graduates, as well as the tenacity that Hunter has, plus the golden rule living philosophy of treating everyone equally, I think, you know, there's no question we've placed some of the hardest positions and at some of the very, very reduced margins. But again, the company's been greatly successful for 15 years. I am not believing it, but I'm looking at the clock on the wall, and I have another hour's worth of conversation I'd like to have with you guys, and we might have to do this show or a variation of it sometime in the future. But in closing, I want to go around the table. Four of you here. I want you all to take a minute, minute and a half. If you get to 2 minutes, I'm going to kick you under the table. But minute, minute and a half, and really tell me, where do you see Hunter in 5 years? And end with, how do we personally get in touch with you? We can give the Hunter website and what have you, but if you want someone to contact you on Twitter, Facebook, or your personal email, someone may be listening and wanting to find a job, which, of course, the best way is to go immediately to www.htrjobs.com and look at the jobs we have posted there. But yeah, minute and a half, anything you want to say about this, about where you believe Hunter will be over the next 3 to 5 years, and kind of what you want to close and maybe any advice. You are four very successful entrepreneurs. Maybe a snippet of advice for someone that's sitting there saying, "Gosh, I'd like to start my own business. What should I be doing?" Alex?
Well, I think in 5 years, I would like to see us continue to grow, obviously, grow responsibly and still be able to maintain great service to our clients. But, you know, I think one of our goals, and it's something we've always tried to do, is sort of stay on the forefront of the latest trends in recruiting. And we've done this with our sourcing and our social media research department, and we've done it with our our senior recruiter model and our most recently implemented model adjusting and adding a junior recruiter model in conjunction with the senior recruiter model. So we have very targeted internal initiatives that we think keep us on the cutting edge. And I'd like to see us maintain that and continue to do these things. And maybe at some point we'll have the next disruptive technology in the recruiting world. And we want to leverage the technologies that are out there. So I see us continue to move in that direction, sort of stay at the front on the cutting edge. I mean, when we started business in 98, one of the big advantages we had is we were one of the first staffing companies using email instead of the fax machine to submit candidates to our clients. And that's just sort of, you know, that's how we did it back then. And we've kind of always clung to that example of what we like to, how we like to consider ourselves when it comes to terms of leveraging the technology and evolving with the environment.
We were also able to ditch the pagers. Mm-hmm. When we switch companies.
Right. So how do I get in contact with Alex Brown?
Stream, fly fishing in North Georgia.
That's right. I do like to fly fish. The best way to reach me is just the general number at our office. It's available on our website at htrjobs.com. I'm also on LinkedIn and Facebook, so look me up and send me an invite.
Scott?
I agree with everything Alex said, and I'd like to see us continue our growth. I am in charge of all of Hunter's delivery, so the recruitment side, and the sourcing division was kind of my baby. So I'd like to see us refine our sourcing tactics and grow there, and be able to find better candidates for our clients faster. And at the end of the day, they're paying us the money to find these candidates that aren't out on the job boards. But I'd also like to see us continue in the direction we've been going with having a more highly evolved junior recruiting program to supplement our senior recruiting model.
And I'm going to contact Scott Hall by?
Same thing, www.htrjobs.com, or you can email me at scott@htrjobs.com.
Mother of two of my favorite boys, Ryan and Garrett Bailey.
Thanks, Ricky. In 5 years, perhaps another city, Hunter opening office in another city, and maybe in 10 years, I'd like to see our oldest son an intern at Hunter.
Well, Ryan would be a good one. He stays there, and everybody at the office loves to have him around.
He asked
Mr. Bailey.
He already asked to come back Friday. He wants to go to work with me. I told him it's not how it works. But now I think, you know, what's gotten us to this point, you know, obviously we're really close. I'd say, you know, continuing to, you know, probably focus on our client base and dig deeper into our clients and then use that as a source of growth in the short term. But in 5 years, I'd like to see us, you know, staying as involved in the community, both from a networking and, you know, charitable nonprofit, you know, as much as we have over the years. And, you know, we don't have an exit strategy. We have a growth strategy. And so I think you'll see us continue that.
And Clint is one of the very probably the only person I've ever seen list this on his LinkedIn profile. He lists networking as a hobby.
And he's very, very good at it, too.
Whereas Alex has fly fishing. But
he's very, very good at it. Well, this has been a treat for me personally, and I wish you great success for the next 5 years or 25 years or however long, long after I've departed Earth. I want you to have many, many, many years of great success and growth because you deserve it. You've worked hard. You've paid the price, and I'm honored to be associated with each and every one of you personally and your families. This is Ricky Steele. I've finished my coffee in Booth 61. I hope you'll come back and join me for a fresh cup next Wednesday or by listening to past shows anytime at Booth 61 with Ricky Steele. I always close our time together by sharing a little blessing for you, for your family, and for your business. That blessing comes from the book of Numbers. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. May the Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen. Thank you for dropping by, and join us next week for a fresh cup in Booth 61.